It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This half hour, we continue our discussions with congressional candidates. My guest this half hour, U.S. Representative Rod Blum. He's a Republican and has been serving Iowa's 1st District in Northeast Iowa, which includes the cities of Dubuque, Waterloo, Cedar Falls, and Cedar Rapids. He was first elected in 2014, reelected in 2016, now seeking his third term. Representative Blum, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Let's start off by having you tell us what you consider your major achievements in your two terms.
Well, not to be egotistical, but I think there's quite a few, but some that come to mind. First of all, when I think of our district, the largest city is Cedar Rapids, and they had that horrible flood in 2008, and they started working on getting federal funding for a flood wall. And it's been 10 years. We had another flood there in 2016. And but it's been 10 years, and a lot of work has gone into it, you know, by Congressman Dave Loebsack and Bruce Braley and Senator Harkin and Senators Ernst and Grassley and myself as well. Mm-hmm. And but we finally got the federal funding. The city was asking for $75 million, and we got $117 million, I believe it is. And so that's good. And part of the reason is the president is in our own party, and I know the president, and I was in his ear a lot about Cedar Rapids needing a flood wall, as was Senator Grassley and Ernst. So just obtaining that money for the flood wall is a big deal. It's great for Cedar Rapids to protect not only on the west side of the Cedar River. There's a lot of residential homes, but mm-hmm. on the east side, of course, is right. Downtown Cedar Rapids. And
aside from the flood wall, what else?
Oh, there's numerous pieces of legislation that I authored that were passed, and chief amongst them is a whistleblower bill that I co-authored with Elijah Cummings, who's a Democrat ranking member of the Oversight Committee. And whistleblowers are very important to our government because it's mm-hmm. so large that we need people to be able to come forward without fear of retaliation and let us know when they think that there's waste, fraud, or abuse going on in the government. So mm-hmm. that's big. And then, of course, the tax cuts package, very lengthy bill, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and I went to conference, and I fought for many things. And one chief among them was historic tax credits. They were eliminated in the House bill. They were in the Senate bill, so it went to conference. I fought turned in, hundreds and hundreds of pages of examples in the 1st District how historic tax credits help our downtown communities.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about taxes, because we have in the last few days seen a ballooning debt and deficit under the President Trump's watch. While Republicans have been in control of Congress, the president's own Treasury Department reports a deficit that hit $779 billion in the 2018 fiscal year. That's the highest level since 2012, and it follows the GOP tax cut bill and the big spending increase in Congress. What happened to Republican promises of action to lower the deficit?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to clear up a misnomer, and that is that the tax cuts have led to this deficit. The tax cuts in 1964, the John Candy tax cuts, were once-in-a-generation tax cuts. They were large, and they paid for themselves. Revenues to the federal government doubled in the next 10 years following those tax cuts. 1986, the Reagan tax cuts, same thing. Historic tax cuts and revenues doubled again in the next 10 years to the federal government. And they're going to again with this tax cut. The tax cuts are not causing the deficit. We have large deficits because we spend too much money. So though revenues may double to the federal government in the next 10 years, I'm sure the money being spent going out the door is going to more than double. In fact, as we sit here today, we have an all-time record tax revenues to the federal government, all-time record.
Do you agree with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, the current House leader, that adjustments to cut spending in entitlement programs like Social Security are what's needed to reduce the deficit? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm not. I don't believe I referred to that at all.
I'm asking if you are referring to it, because Mitch McConnell hasn't.
Oh, I wasn't aware of what Mitch said. But Social Security is scheduled to go bankrupt in 16 years. Mm-hmm. Medicare is going to go bankrupt in 8 years. So here's what we can do. We can sit back and do nothing, and benefits will be cut by 30 to 40% when that happens. Nobody, I don't think, wants that. So we need to look at those programs, and we need to reform those programs. That doesn't necessarily mean spending cuts to those programs. Maybe it's increased taxes. Maybe it's taking off income limits. Maybe it's means testing. the benefits. We need to sit down and take the best of both parties' ideas and have a bipartisan bill. Absolutely needs to be bipartisan.
U.S. Representative Rod Blum is my guest this half hour. Let's talk about trade, another big item that's been in our news, Congressman. The tariffs the president has imposed on foreign countries, particularly China, have caused Iowa farmers anxiety. I'm sure you've heard about it from farmers as China has imposed new tariffs on their products. You have thanked the president for his political courage in seeking to renegotiate the country's international trade deals. Even as many of Iowa's elected leaders, also Republicans, have sought to sort of distance themselves from these tariffs. You told Donald Trump back in July when he visited, you've taken some heat for it in the short term, but in the long run, the farmers, the manufacturers, the employers are all going to be better off. Tell us, Congressman, when are they going to be better off? What's the timeline you can communicate to concerned Iowans?
Yes, and I did congratulate the president for having political courage, because political courage is in short supply in Washington, D.C. There's no political gain for him to renegotiate these trade deals. The easy thing for him to do would be to sit back and just keep them the way they are. But let's just take NAFTA, for example. We lost a lot of manufacturing jobs to Mexico. Organized labor didn't like NAFTA at all. And so our president reopened and renegotiated NAFTA. Now, Mexico and Canada happen to be two of our three biggest trading partners. That took political courage to do that, because there's going to be a little bit of short-term hurt because it's being renegotiated and because of tariffs during the negotiations. But now we have the new USMCA agreement, and it's better than NAFTA. I'll read it when I get back to Washington, D.C., but industry experts have told me it's much better. And I'm glad the president renegotiated that, because farmers I've spoke to said we're willing to have one season or 1 year of a little bit of short-term pain to have 10 or 20 years of long-term gain. Mm-hmm. And we've also signed trade agreements with Australia, South Korea. We did a $2 billion soybean deal with Taiwan. We've agreed with the European Union that we're not going to have tariffs as we renegotiate the agreement with them. And we just announced a month ago we are going to not have tariffs as we renegotiate a trade agreement with Japan. So the big one left is China. And China's burning through their soybean inventories as we speak. They're buying most of their soybeans from Brazil now instead of the U.S., and they're paying a king's ransom. And they're coming to us, and they're wanting to get a deal done. That's a good place to be in negotiations.
Congressman Blum, the House Ethics Committee in September announced it was extending a matter in reference to a failure to list your financial interest in Tin Moon. That's an internet company, marketing company. You said it was a clerical error, and I think a lot of us, constituents, could be understanding of an error filling out a form. But what would you tell your constituents about why one of your staff members appeared in a testimonial for this company, Tin Moon?
What I would tell them is, first of all, I don't manage Tin Moon. I don't have time to manage even my own schedule, much less a company. So I have nothing to do with the day-to-day management of Tin Moon, which was a $700 investment on my behalf. But a staff member of mine is free on his own time to appear in an online ad for anybody that they want. There's nothing illegal about that. There's nothing unethical about that. There's nothing immoral about that. It's politics, and it's political season. Washington, D.C. bureaucratic lawyers are paid to dig into this kind of stuff and make it sound nefarious. Mm-hmm. So on his own time, one of my staff members did an online ad for Tin Moon. Not asked by me to do it, but asked by the president of the company to do it, and never said in the online ad that he was on my staff. He just did it as a favor because the president of Tin Moon is a friend of his. So, I mean, there's nothing nefarious about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing at all.
Tin Moon offers businesses the service of helping to sort of, in its words, bury the FDA warning letters about potential violations under more positive search results on the internet. As a congressman, I wonder how you balance the needs of the public's right to know about FDA warning letters with the desire of a business that you're connected with to bury those results.
Tin Moon has four clients, and none of them, we've never did business with anybody with an FDA violation, the president of the company tells me. I mean, so it's really a non-issue. Tin Moon's in the reputation management business, online reputation management. It's over $1 billion industry. And once again, there's nothing nefarious about trying to help a company's reputation. Because I could ask the question in reverse and say, because a company was cited for an FDA violation, should they go out of business? No, we just try to, well, we don't have any clients like that, but if we did, we would just try to restore their reputation. Once again, nothing illegal, immoral, unethical about that, but it's political season. Mm-hmm. It's political season, so let's just try to, you know, I'm a career small businessman. I'm not a career politician. And this is exactly the type of stuff. These are the reasons why business people don't want to get into politics. And this is why we end up with career politicians only, almost exclusively in office, because person after person has come to me and said, I can't believe you're doing this. I can't believe you're running for Congress being a businessman, because this is the types of things they're going to do to you. And, you know, I can't call someplace and get my reputation back after it's been destroyed by the Democrat Party. And, you know, but at least I can put my head on the pillow at night. No, you know, I'm very ethical. Our companies have never done anything unethical. And this is just election year politics as usual. Mm-hmm. And the Iowa voters can see through it.
Right. And your criticism also extends to the news media. When the press reported on the U.S. House Ethics Committee investigation, you said the press works to, quote, make mountains out of molehills. In 2017, this made national news. You abruptly ended an interview with KCRG, apparently unhappy, I guess, with the line of questioning about who would be allowed in a series of town hall events you were holding in your district. I'm just wondering, how do you see your relationship with the news media?
Well, I think if you ask the average person on the street, they'll tell you the news media is biased, and they're biased toward Democrats and the left. And I think it's been proven out. I believe
in what way?
95% of the coverage of our president has been negative. Mm-hmm. We track my coverage in the major newspapers in my district, and it's you know, 60, 70, 80% is negative. So that shows a bias, unless, of course, you think 80% of the things that I've done are wrong. Mm-hmm. And as far as the interview goes, I was lied to by that person giving that interview, not once, not twice, but three times. And then he asked me a very inappropriate question for a journalist to be asking to a candidate. And that's why I took my mic off and walked off the interview. And once again, I mean, I didn't know there was a law against that.
All right. U.S. Representative Rod Blum, my guest this half hour. This is the first time that we've spoken on this show. And Iowa Public Radio has reached out to your office for an interview on River to River more than 23 times since March of 2015. This is the first time we've been able to confirm an interview with you. I wonder if you see accessibility to the media as crucial to your job as Iowa's representative.
Oh, I talk to the media a lot. I have no idea about the 23 times. I don't schedule my own time.
Well, we've been trying to get in touch with you for 3.5 years for an interview, and you have no idea that we've been trying to get in touch with you.
Oh, absolutely not. I don't schedule my own time. I'm scheduled. But you know what? It's kind of interesting, this interview.
Yeah.
It's been one negative question after another. Do we want to talk about how great the economy is? Do we want to talk about how we have ISIS on the run?
I think
Do we want to talk about our trade agreements getting renegotiated and how good they're going to be for our country?
I think
You're sitting here digging up. You're trying to. Is there anything else you can dig up?
No,
and throw
I think
at me?
I think we started the interview by talking about what you see as your major achievements: the flood wall, the trade negotiations. I don't think that's cast right in the accurate light here. But I'm wondering, what media do you choose to talk with? Because it's not Iowa Public Radio.
I guess you choose not to listen to me. I don't choose the media. I don't do that for myself. Somebody else schedules me.
And you don't check in with them about what's going on with Iowa Public Radio? Why haven't they
Absolutely
reached out
not.
In 3.5 years?
No, of course not.
We have representatives. All your other people in Congress, Senators Grassley and Ernst, are gladly willing to come on this program multiple times per year.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Let's talk a little bit about Medicare. In a recent debate, you said that rather than cost-shifting, expanding Medicare, Congress should unleash what you said is the miracle of the free market to lower health care costs. Tell us about the evidence you have that the free market would increase competition and drive down premiums.
The evidence is all around us. Just look at any product in the United States that you buy. There's no proven way better than the miracle of capitalism and the free market to drive the prices of products down and to increase the quality of a product, mm-hmm. than the free market. certainly not government picking winners and losers.
When you say it's all around, can you give a specific example? I'm sorry to cut in, but we're running. Pardon
me? Any product you look at. It's just like
name a product, though.
Well, how about our cell phones? How about our cell phones?
Healthcare industry.
I don't understand your question. The point is, it's overregulated on the free market side, on the supply side of the equation. It's overregulated. So it's not a totally free market. Why can't I buy health insurance in Illinois or Wisconsin? They're 1 mile from me. Why can't I choose from 100 different plans across this nation? But I can't. I can only buy health insurance in Iowa. That's a great example. If I could choose from 100 different plans, I guarantee you the competition would drive the prices down. Mm-hmm. But right now, we can only buy health insurance in our state. Why can't we re-import drugs, which is Hillary Clinton's idea, from other countries? Because they're a dime on the dollar in these other, Mexico and Canada, for example, for the exact same drugs we have in the United States. Why can't we do that? Why can't we buy health insurance based on associations? And we did get that finally accomplished. So if I belong to the Teachers Association or the Restaurant Association, I should be able to buy, they should be able to offer health insurance. And now finally they can do that. So there's a lot of ways that if we would let the free market go in the health insurance side, it would drive down prices. But we need competition, and we don't need overregulation. And the government still has a role to play. They need to help people who need help. Senior citizens, special needs folks, our veterans, the indigent. We still need to help them financially,
right.
Let the free market perform its miracle.
Mm-hmm. It didn't end up becoming law, but you voted for the House Republican health care bill, the American Health Care Act, AHCA was the acronym we had there. That plan included, and you mentioned this, an $880 million Medicaid reduction. So if you want to reach out to the needy in terms of medical costs, what was your reasoning for reducing the federal funding for Medicaid?
Well, it was increased under the Obama administration. They increased if you're referring to the federal poverty level, it paid, I think, up to 132%. You could qualify of the federal poverty level. You could qualify for premium subsidies for Obamacare. Obamacare, Kathleen Sebelius, the HHS secretary at the time, famously said, "We're going to bend the cost curve down with Obamacare," and nothing could be further from the truth. We didn't bend any cost curves down. Costs never decreased under the Obamacare. We just shifted costs. So if my neighbor now today under Obamacare is paying for my health insurance premium, I think Obamacare is awesome. I love it. However, my neighbor doesn't think it's such a great deal because now they're paying for their own health insurance and my health insurance. The government is the largest purchaser of health care in the United States. The way the government can keep Medicare solvent for a longer period of time is by having costs decrease, the actual costs decrease. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do that is to have the miracle of competition and the private sector do their thing.
Polls show, Congressman Blum, there's a high likelihood, if you believe polls, and we can be reminded of 2016, of course, there's a high likelihood, according to polls, of the U.S. House flipping to Democratic control. If it doesn't, and you are reelected to a third term in Iowa's 1st District, what are your highest priorities going forward, and what do you understand to be the main future priorities of GOP House, should it remain in control?
Yes, I don't know what the priorities of the GOP House is. It'll depend on who the leadership is. But my priorities would be probably five things. One is to keep our economic recovery going, keep the economy strong. Secondly is continue to work to drain the swamp. Hopefully one of my bills would get brought to the House for a vote. Thirdly, health care reform. We need to go back and address health care. Hopefully we can do it in a bipartisan fashion. Fourth is immigration reform. Hopefully we can do that in a bipartisan fashion. And then fifthly, welfare reform.
Finally, Congressman, I would like to have you address the recent news, more recent news, the wave of attempted pipe bombings with devices sent to several prominent Democrats, opponents of Donald Trump, who have been the rhetorical targets of the president. What do you see, if any, connection between those bomb threats and the hostile political environment in this country? Do you see a connection?
I'm not sure, but I just know that the level of discourse politically in this country is just about hit bottom. And Senator Rand Paul said a week ago that hopefully somebody doesn't get killed, a congressman or a senator, because mm-hmm. it seems like that's the way we're heading. And I've received death threats in the last 18 months. My wife has received messages saying, "We know where you live." My 19-year-old daughter in college has received messages. We hope you get cancer and die. We hope you get pregnant and have to have an abortion. You know, this. I signed up for this job and ran for it because I love our country. And I'm just trying to be a statesman and serve our country. And this wasn't part of the bargain.
Right. And I'm really sorry to hear that. That is distressing.
I just hope the level of discourse. I believe in Iowa Nice, and for the most part, 99% of it is Iowa Nice, but 1% seems to be very vocal, and I just hope we can get back in Iowa to respecting each other's opinions, at least listen to each other's opinions.
Right,
we don't
right.
have to agree, but let's respectfully listen.
I guess one thing I'm also really asking is the extent to which you think, and you said very vocal people, the extent to which you think Donald Trump bears any responsibility for fostering this hostility with his remarks about body slams, about punching people in the face.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's both sides. Both. Mm-hmm. I mean, it isn't like I'm a Republican saying the Democrats are to blame. Both sides are to blame, and we just need to go back to respecting each other.
Would you tell the president to please tone down the rhetoric?
Oh, I tell both sides, tone down the rhetoric. Let's just stop saying those things and let's talk about policy.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Rod Blum of Iowa's 1st District, and he's facing a re-election here just in a few days. Representative Blum, we appreciate you coming into our studio.
Yes, thanks so much. All the best.
A conversation I had last Thursday with Congressman Rod Blum of Iowa's 1st District. I'm scheduled to speak with his Democratic opponent on this program later this week. Abby Finkenauer is slated to be a guest here on River to River Friday, November 2nd, over the noon hour. It's part of our effort to have conversations with all of the major party congressional candidates in Iowa in the run-up to the midterm election, which is about a week away. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.